Hey, this is Mike Evans. Listen to every episode of Schlereth and Evans on demand at 1043thefan.com. Presented by Siltahara Motors, the home of the zero down with Chapter 7 and 13 bankruptcies. Regardless of your financial standing, no one should be without a vehicle. Visit the special financing section at sthmotors.com.
And look who has jumped right in here. It's like a hockey line shift coming over the boards. Clutch. It's the one and only Nate Jackson from Chad and Nate, who's going to fill in for the last hour. Thank you, my man.
Anytime, man. Anything for you guys.
I appreciate that. Just clutch. Showing up.
Well, thank you. Thank you.
On time, ready to jump right in. It's like the 27 catches that you had in your NFL career.
Oh.
How many of them were clutch?
All
That's going to be my first question.
Every single
That's my question.
One of them, Mike.
Question Nate. How many of those were clutch? How many of those were third? Come on, you know. Of those 27, how many were third down conversions?
I actually don't know.
Come on!
Probably not a lot, Mike.
No?
You know, caught a lot of passes in college. I made it to the NFL from a D3 school thinking, and a lot of people probably think, hey, man, you made it from D3. You're probably just happy to be there, right? Just happy to be. But no, I wanted the ball just as much as anyone else did, so I assumed I was going to catch more passes. But so I was happy when it did come my way, but it didn't come enough.
Two career touchdown catches. Now, I bet you remember both of those.
Sure do. because it took me a long time to get there.
Yes, it was later in your career.
It
yes.
was my fifth year before
Correct.
I had my first touchdown.
Correct.
And it was a one-yarder.
A one-yarder?
Both touchdowns were one-yarders, Mike.
Both of them were?
They were. And the first one, my parents were in the stands about, 15 yards from where it happened. I mean, right there.
Oh, that's so cool.
The cool thing about that was I knew that that was a play that was designed to put in that week. I knew I was going to, if we got down on the goal line, we threw a pass, I was going to get that. Shanny put that in to, get me in the end zone. And it was like this kind of triple motion thing. And so the night before the game, my dad was in town and I busted out the playbook and I showed him the play. And I said, if we get down here on the 1 yard line, pay attention because this is what I'm going to be doing. And it just worked out that we were down on the one right in front of my mom and my dad. And of course we ran that play and it was against the Jags. And Jay Cutler fired it in there, right on the money, and it was my first career touchdown. Ironically enough, it was 3 years prior to that when I caught my first ever passes in a game, and that was against the Jags as a receiver in Jacksonville. So,
and your other one?
Well, my other one was against the Saints, and it was on the first drive of the game. It was the next year, and it was another one-yarder. It was a play-action pass. I was open in the back of the end zone, and Jay floated it a little bit. I had to go up and get it, and I toe-tapped.
Oh, look at you, Mr. Toe-Tap.
Huh? And both of them were here at home,
yeah.
And the crowd went wild,
yes,
as they say.
Yes,
had some preseason touchdowns as well.
Uh-huh.
I think I had like a 50-yarder in preseason. That was
really?
Cool. From Jake Plummer on a play-action pass. Yeah, and then one touchdown I had in preseason, I threw the ball into the stands.
So the two touchdowns that you caught were from Jay Cutler.
Yeah.
Give all of us the real Jay Cutler.
Come on.
All right.
What do you mean?
Well, because while he was here, and then throughout his subsequent years in Chicago, built a reputation of being kind of a Richard Nine.
Yeah.
Just hard to embrace, hard to root for. Exceptional talent. I have said this for over a decade. I don't know if I have ever really seen a quarterback who checked every single box like Jay Cutler did in terms of size, mobility, arm strength, intelligence, could do it all. That if you were drawing up, if you were going into a laboratory and trying to create the perfect quarterback, you could make an argument that it would spit out Jay Cutler.
Yeah.
But yet, the talent and everything never really met the production, and it just you just felt like you were watching a guy like who, don't, Jay Cutler, don't care, that kind of thing. So, who is the real Jay Cutler? What we saw, or what's the inside skinny?
I think the real Jay Cutler is still, he's still figuring out who that is.
Mm.
And most football players deal with that. to an extent, because they're so good as athletes from such a young age. They get treated a certain way. He's from Santa Claus, Indiana. And he was, from the moment he was, I imagine, put on a helmet, the golden child in that community. And was celebrated and went to Vanderbilt. Broke some records there. The irony is, I played NFL Europe in 2004 with a quarterback named Greg Zolman, who was a lefty. And he was a Vanderbilt quarterback who broke all the records. And then Jay took over for Greg Zolman and broke his records. And I got to know Greg before I got to know Jay. And so when Jay was drafted to the Broncos in 2006, after we went to the AFC Championship, now Jake was our leader. 10-6, 10-6, 13-3 under Jake Plummer. AFC Championship, then you draft Jay. So Jay came into a situation that was a little unique. Now, a lot of times the older quarterback gets replaced by a young gunslinger, but rarely when you are having that kind of success.
7-4, I believe, at that time?
We were 7-4 when the switch was made.
Yeah.
But we were 7-3 when the word came down that if we lost, the switch was going to be made. Because we weren't scoring a lot of points, but we were winning. We had a good defense. We were a good unit. We're finding ways to win. But some people want wins to look a certain way. You want numbers. You want your quarterback throwing it around the yard. And for Coach Shanahan, who is a quarterback guru, Jake wasn't scratching the itch for him. He wanted a guy, like you said, checks all those boxes. Imagine what this offense could do if we had another guy in there who had these attributes. So Jay came into a kind of a difficult situation. He came into a good team, but he came into a situation where the leader was already established. So he had to come in and try to find his way. Now, on top of that, he's a bit of a standoffish dude, a little socially awkward, you know. And sometimes his standoffishness could be mistaken for that, for him thinking he's too good for you. But he just doesn't know what to say. Bad social skills.
Interesting. Okay.
So he was just kind of quiet.
Okay.
You know, you catch him out on the town after a couple sodas.
Smoking Jay.
He'll loosen up a little bit.
Uh-huh.
The best conversations I ever had with Jay Cutler was at Spill, which was a watering hole downtown.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, that's where he would loosen up a little bit. But he just came from a different kind of family. I mean, his dad was on the sidelines during training camp. And he was out on the field. I've never seen anyone's dad on the field in training camp. Parents don't come to that stuff. They're on the other side of the ropes. His dad was between the two fields, kind of mingling, walking around as if he was a trainer or something. That was unusual. And when Jay moved here, his whole family moved here with him. You know, and so I think that he was a little immature and didn't really know how to handle the situation. And so that's hard when your quarterback is that way, because the quarterback, you don't need to be a rah-rah guy, but you need to be cool. Be cool.
Right.
And Jay would sometimes, when the defense, for example, would give up a bad play, he would wear that on his face. Like, come on. Like, you know, instead of supporting your guys, kind of being like, what are you guys doing? Whereas Jake Plummer, if our defense gave up a big play, he'd be going over there pumping them up.
Right.
We got you. We're going to go down and score.
So I know you're a big Shanny guy. You love Mike. Huge respect for Mike. But he really misread that year, didn't he? That situation.
I think that he would say that. Yeah, I've never talked to him about it, but I've heard that some people have told me that he admitted that that was a mistake.
Yeah.
But it just shows the temptation of the unknown gunslinger.
Sure, you draft one of these guys, it's like that shiny toy that's in the wrapping up on the shelf. You can't wait to take it down and play with it.
Yeah. And the drum beat, the media just boom, 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 boom. Like, Jay, where's Jay? We want Jay. And every time Jake would throw an interception.
Oh, that wasn't me. That was my partner at the time, Sandy Clough.
Sandy,
Bob Chickabowow. He loved Cutler.
Did he?
Ugh. Ugh.
And he didn't love.
Oh, to this day, still loves Cutler. The arguments we'd get in over that one. Oh, you can imagine.
Well, it just goes to, it's a philosophical argument. What's most important? Winning? Or, like, I don't even know. Like,
see, Mike's argument was, and he said this at the time, was he was conceding that you guys were a good team.
Right.
With Jake. But in order to be a Super Bowl winning team, that Jay Cutler gave you the best chance of being a Super Bowl team.
Right.
It was boom or bust.
Yep.
But he was betting on the boom.
Yep. Yep. And there's not a lot of time. You don't have time to let things develop, and it's like the clock is ticking, you know? And for Coach Shanahan, he won two Super Bowls back-to-back, but it had been a while since he'd been back, and he wanted to get back.
And he was starting to hear all that, you can't win without John stuff.
Right.
Which had to be driving him crazy.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And the pressure's on. The pressure's on to find the right guy. And, you know, in my opinion, Jake was a really good quarterback for us. Was he perfect? No. And neither was Jay. Jay revealed himself to be not as good of a quarterback as Jake Plummer. Because it's about your team. It's about the chemistry. It's about the mix, you know? Like, one guy doesn't make a play, the other team picks him up because of the relationship they have. The camaraderie, the brotherhood, what you've been through. You know, how you pick up my slack, I pick up yours, and that's how teams work. And the good ones find a way to win, even when the numbers aren't great. So yeah, Jay came into that situation and took over a 7-4 ball team. And we went, I guess, in the last five games, 2-3, missed the playoffs the following year and the following year, and then we're all gone.
Yep. That's the way it works.
That's all she wrote.
So yesterday we had our fan war room bi-week special over at Brothers Barbecue, and your partner Chad Brown was part of it. And the overwhelming consensus of everybody that was there, Zach, Stoke, myself, Chad, Cecil Lammy, is nobody, none of us are expecting a second half final seven game, the whole season's in front of us, resurgence from the Broncos. Everybody is pretty much in the agreement that the most they win between now and the end of the season is maybe another two or three games. You fall in that same category?
Probably. I think three or four they could do. Three or four games. But I wouldn't be surprised if they win five. Because you're, here's Nate, what.
You wouldn't be surprised?
No.
After watching this team for 2.5 years, watching this team for 10 games, you all of a sudden think they have a 5 out of 7 run in them?
Yes, and here's why, Mike. Because
I can't wait to hear this.
It's not about the Broncos. It's about the rest of the league being so inconsistent. Mm. And week to week, who are you going to get?
Right.
You're going to. So people think Dallas is going to go in and beat Kansas City this week in Kansas City, but the Broncos went and spanked the Cowboys in Dallas. How does that happen week to week? Something's wacky about this season. But I would argue that, look, I mean, you can't separate these people who play football from the world we live in. Go out in the world. It's a wacky world. 2021 ain't normal. Everyone else is loopy out here too. So you take these guys who are living in 2021, put them on a football team and think they're going to play like 1995. It ain't going to happen. So these guys are wildly roller coaster like with their emotions. So a head coach has to corral that and get these guys to be even keel. That's what a head coach's job is in this world. Get these guys to stay on task every day. Can Vic be that guy? No. But maybe someone in the building can. Maybe the position coaches, maybe, you know, someone around there can get these guys settled in, you know, because they're up. They're just too wild. They're right. Swinging back and forth, right? Who are the Broncos? If they can figure out who they are, then I can see them going on a run.
This is the roller coaster theory then.
Yeah.
You're banking this on the roller coaster theory that they just keep running into teams that are riding that wild roller coaster. And if they just get lucky enough, 5 of the 7 times they play an opponent, that team will be on a whoop, going down as part of the roller coaster.
Look, Detroit, Cincinnati, those, you can win those. You can beat the Chargers at least once, maybe twice. You beat the Chargers twice and Vegas once, lose to Kansas City both times. That's 5 and 7. Or 5 out of the next 7.
5 and 2, yeah. Ha, huh, wow. I love your enthusiasm. I love your optimism. Man, what I hope you're right. But they just, at some point, you are what you are.
Yes.
And I feel like I've watched this episode over and over and over again. I know what the ending is. I just know what the ending is. I just don't see all of a sudden the major plot twist that hits me like, wow, where'd that come from? I didn't see that one coming.
Yeah. 8 and 9, what do you think? 7 and 10?
It feels like 8 and 9. I think they win 3 more.
Mm. Who do you think they beat?
Oh, boy.
Kansas City twice and the Chargers once and right. The rest?
Boy, wouldn't that be a kick in the onions that you win 3 games out of the 5 left against the division and you fall flat against the Detroits and Cincinnati's and Vegas of the world.
No, wouldn't it be appropriate to beat Kansas City.
We're
going to
bite a kneecap off.
To beat Kansas City and Kansas City on December 5th and then come home and lose to Detroit.
Right.
That would be very on brand.
Yes, it would be.
Yeah.
It would be. You understand, by the way, when you're talking about your roller coaster theory, that all the teams on the Broncos schedule are looking at the Broncos exactly the same way.
Yeah. And that's why how Dallas looked at them a couple weeks ago.
Right. And it worked to the Broncos' benefit.
It did. But they were also galvanized by Vaughn leaving and like this, you know, they don't respect us and they think Vaughn, you know. What's your next motivational tool and tactic? Like, how are you going to press the buttons to get these guys to play well? That's what a leader does.
So I asked this question to Mark earlier in the week. I ask it of you now. You're in that locker room right now. Is there a sense in locker rooms that ultimately players know what they are as a team? You know what you are?
No.
No. Because Mark said yes. Mark said, especially this deep in the season, everybody knows what we are.
And what is that?
A 5-5, mediocre, head-scratching, up one week, down the next, inexplicable, hard-to-explain football team.
Okay, I think they know that part. I think they know that they've been up and down and up and down, but I don't think they know where they truly settle. You know what I mean? Because they've had such horrible performances. They've had good performances, not great, but good. Where are they? I don't think they know. I think they're still searching for an identity, and I don't know how you find it, you know, because to me, I've never been on a team like this, like up and down and up and down. I mean, every week we prepared exactly the same. We really brought, you know, every once in a while we would lose a bad one, but I don't remember a lot of bad losses.
No.
In the 6 years
no.
I was here.
No.
So we were always competitive. We always had a good game plan. We always felt good about it on Sunday. We always stepped out on the field confident we were going to win. And when we didn't, it was a surprise. Can these Broncos really truly say they've been surprised about every loss? Did they really feel like we're going to win this game? We have the game plan in place, the good week of practice. We feel good about it. To me, when you watch this offense, and I heard you guys on the War Room talking yesterday, and a lot of people were, you know, about the biggest disappointment, and it was the defense. To me, it's not. It's the offense. The offense has failed the team because they can't put points on the board, especially in the first half. When I played for the Broncos, we always believed we were going to put a ton of points on the board. We wanted to hang 50 on you. That was the point. That's the point of football. Not to like have a really strong defense and then play conservative offense and win. No, the point is to crush the opponent and score tons of touchdowns. If you're a receiver, like I feel bad for these Broncos receivers because that's not the ethos of this team to put up a bunch of points. This team was created in Vic Fangio's image to have an awesome defense and just like a save it, you know, don't ruin it offense, which is the height of hubris, in my opinion, in this NFL. 2020, the most points ever scored, offensive explosion, most touchdowns ever thrown, and you believe you're going to put a stop to that because you're a defensive mastermind? You don't need an offense that can score points? Come on, man. That was a big flaw in the design of this team, that you did not need a dynamic offense in this NFL.
So you're right. When you were with the Broncos playing for Shanahan, there was a consistency there. So knowing what goes into being even keel as a team, as a franchise, then do you have any theories to explain the up and down nature? How does that happen? What leads to such up and down performances from somebody who knows only that real steady way of doing things?
You don't start smelling yourself after a win. You don't think you're so great. You know, you always know that there's always improvements to be made. You always keep your eye forward on the next opponent. If you have a horrible game too, you don't get so far down in the tank that you can't just like here's an example. I mean, the Dallas win was a huge win for the team, but the special teams played poorly. So Tom McMahon was like talking and he was like, I told my guys, you can't be happy at all. You should be embarrassed. You should be, you know, so while the rest of the team, the offense and defense is like, you know, feeling good about the win, he wants them to feel horrible. Like, you know, I understand a healthy dose of like criticism when you don't play well, but he wanted those guys to feel crappy. I don't think that's the way to do it. You know, you got to stay in the middle. Don't get too high. Don't get too low.
It's cliche, but
act like you've been there.
There's a reason cliches are cliches.
Yeah. And, you know, if you start feeling real good or really real bad about the past loss, you're looking in your rearview mirror, you're not going to see what's in front of you. You're going to get smacked by it. So it's a consistency of preparation. You know exactly what happens every Monday, exactly what happens every Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday. It's always the same. It's a system. There are systems in place, Mike. And if those are solidified, and guys fall into it, it's easy to stay even keel because those are always the same. And I don't know what their system's like over there. Vic Fangio's a third-year head coach who's been coaching football for 42 years or something like that. So this is new to him. He admitted it took him till week 9 or 10 to take a deep dive into his offense, his own offense, and tell Pat Shurmur, maybe you should dress these plays up a bit because they're obvious. So if Vic had been doing this a while, he would have done this from the start. He'd be doing this every week, taking a deep dive, you know. So he's learning on the job. And he's making some mistakes.
On this Is It Just Me Friday, here's one. Is it just me or the orange and blue sunglasses of Bronco optimism that Nate is wearing going to make me have to steal his car for the third time?
Low blow. Low blow.
Are those
steel? Very nice.
You keep those orange and blue optimism sunglasses in your car?
Yeah, they stole them, so those are gone too.
I shouldn't be laughing.
No, it's cool, man.
I'm sorry.
It's cool. Yeah.
There is a buzzard's luck about this that does make me laugh, though.
Yeah. You know what? Like, this is a nostalgia can bite you. This car, I bought that car my first week on the practice squad. It was a stupid purchase then. But it reminded me that I better work really hard to pay for this thing. You know? And I did. And I paid for it.
Yeah.
And it was symbolic of that hard work that got me into the NFL. So I've been holding on to that car as long as it's been rolling, and it's been rolling.
It is. What is it, 20 years?
No, 18.
18.
20. I bought it in 2003, in September of 2003. There was a time when I wasn't driving it a lot because I was living, you know, in California and it was parked here in my house. And so it doesn't have, like, for an 18-year-old car, it has 150,000 miles on it.
Okay.
So not super, super
right.
old. So it was always running well. I love the car. It was comfortable, but nostalgia. Nostalgia. I bought it with football money. I bought it with my hard work in football. Same thing with my house here. It was in Greenwood Village. I bought that thing with my football effort. And I had to sell that thing eventually. And that was a nostalgic moment as well. And that house flooded when I was in California. And that was a symbolic end. I had to move on from it.
Huh. Yeah, I get the nostalgia. That car represented something. Sure. Was that a treat yourself? What does Orlando calls it?
Tuesday?
Treat Yourself Tuesday? Treat Yourself Tuesday performance?
It was my very first
one.
My first week on the practice squad. Because I came out, you know, I got a tap on the shoulder in the middle of training camp when I was in San Francisco and told, basically, we just traded you to Denver. I was going out to my second practice of the day. I was, you know, it was at the end of training camp. I had been through a camp and I was taped up. I had my helmet in my hand, my jersey on. I got a tap on the shoulder. They want to talk to you upstairs. Went upstairs and it was Bill Walsh who had an office there at the time. He was a consultant. He sat me down. He said, Nate, we traded you to Denver. Your flight leaves in 3 hours. So good luck. And he shook my hand, and that was the end of my 49er days. And a couple hours later,
I was sent packing by Bill Walsh. That's actually pretty cool.
Yeah, he's the one who called Channy and said, would you be willing to take a look at this kid? Because I was way down on the depth chart with the Niners, and it wasn't looking good. And Bill Walsh, who was just a consultant there at the time, asked Coach Erickson if I was going to make the team. He said, probably not. He said, can I make a couple calls? And so he called Channy, and Channy said, sure, let's bring him over here. Let's take a look. And so the next morning I was here wearing a new jersey and, you know, trying to catch my breath in the altitude. And yeah, so I made the team as a practice squad player, and then I bought the car.
That's awesome.
Yeah,
that's awesome. Real quick, is it just me? Damn, what a rough hour for Nate. First, Evans is bagging on him about how many catches he had, and now this guy's talking about taking his car. First of all, I never bagged on. I respect every single one of you that had what it took to get to that level. You'll never, never, ever, ever hear me denigrate a career by saying, oh, you're there and you only had 20. No, you got there, man. You got there. You got there out of the D3 school. You got there. 27 catches in the NFL. Hey, man, that is legit. Coming out of Menlo College. But I'd expect nothing less from a guy born on June 4th. Okay, Sandy Clough will join us coming up next, as he was part of the postgame show following the Nuggets. Kind of head-scratching loss to Philadelphia last night. What does that all mean? Where'd that come from? What does it mean moving forward? Sandy will tell us next. Denver Sports Station, 104.3 The Fan.
Hey, it's Mike Evans. Siltahar Motors is the home of zero down. Regardless of your credit or financial situation, Siltahar Motors will help you get behind the wheel. People with poor credit or in bankruptcy can qualify for zero down and no payments for 45 days and be driving in their new car within hours of stopping by the dealership. Check out any of the cars Siltahar Motors currently has on site at sthmotors.com. Siltahar Motors is conveniently located at Highway 36 in Wadsworth, so regardless of your financial situation, Siltahar Motors will get you the car you deserve at sthmotors.com.
All right, so with Mark calling Philadelphia and New Orleans this weekend, he is off, moved on to do his Eagles prep. He's over at the Eagles facility, hanging out with Nick Sirianni, playing rock, paper, scissors. Nate Jackson's been kind enough to come in early, an hour early, from his regular show with Chad Brown, so I thank you so much for coming on in, and even better, we get a chance now to visit with Sandy Clough, who of course was on last night following the Nuggets loss at home to Philadelphia as part of the Nuggets postgame show. He joins us now. Sandy, good morning. How do you explain this one? You talk about one that seemed like an easy one. Philadelphia, losers of five straight, missing Joel Embiid, missing Ben Simmons, missing some other regulars, a Nuggets team coming in off a loss the other night. Boy, this one seemed like an automatic. So what happened?
It did come out of nowhere, didn't it? Fundamentally, they didn't play any defense in the first half, and the offense dried up in the second half. And Philadelphia came in, I think, with maybe a different attitude than they've had in recent games. It turned into a guards game, and the Philadelphia guards were better. And both George Karl, our post-game analyst last night, and Michael Malone at about the same time over at Ball Arena, both said the bench needs some help from the coach. And what that means exactly, we may find out as soon as tonight. I'm not sure what that means, but both George and Michael Malone realized that they got to make some changes on the bench, different combinations. George made the point that they're using basically the same rotation, the same combinations at the same times in games over and over and over, and it may be time to shake things up. Maybe start Bol Bol tonight, because last night Jeff Green, other than one defensive rebound, had zeros
in 23 minutes. In 23 minutes, yeah. How do you
unbelievable?
How do you accomplish that?
I've never seen anything like that.
I'm with you.
So, Sandy, do you think Bol Bol is ready for those sort of minutes? Is his game developed? I know he's a kind of a project.
He might be, but he plays with some energy. And in watching the game last night, in the first half, they had no energy on the defensive end. And in the second half, it was what a transformation. You had Will Barton and Nikola Jokic combined for 42 points in the first half and 7 points in the second half. Those two can carry you through some games. But if you play a team that comes at you with some sense of resolve and gets on top of you, in this league, apart from three or four teams, there isn't that much difference among the other 26, 27 teams. There really isn't. And the Nuggets are one of those teams kind of in the middle. Probably a top 10 team, but not a top 5 team. And I think they've got real problems. I mean, Jokic played very well again last night. But, boy, in a game they lost by more than 10 and really weren't in the game at all in the fourth quarter, he played 35 minutes, and they've got to come back tonight. Barton played 34 minutes. They've got to come back tonight. And I honestly don't, you know, it's a crazy thing, sports. They might win tonight by 10 or 15 against clearly a better team. But I wouldn't be averse to shaking things up, and maybe, yes, maybe starting Bol Bol and getting some energy into the game early that they clearly never had last night.
All right, so just to be clear, what you heard from both George Karl and Michael Malone was a call to perhaps take what is existing here and shake it up, as opposed to necessarily a call for help from Tim Connelly to bring in help from the outside.
Well, they don't have salary cap room to do very much in that vein. But, yes, thank you for asking for the clarification. Both Sean and I were startled because we were kind of monitoring what Malone said, and virtually at the same time George was responding to a question about, as a former coach, what would you do in this situation? And that was his response. And we'll see. I just think Malone needs to get more creative with his rotations and put out different combinations, and maybe you'll find one that works. And Bol Bol got 7 or 8 minutes. You'll remember this. The other night, the first half, played very, very well in the Dallas game, on the road, played well. And then he only got 3 minutes in the second half. And yesterday, on his birthday, he didn't get in until very late when it was garbage time. I would see what kind of energy he can bring. Yes, he's raw, but he's kind of a difficult matchup in a lot of ways for teams, because how do you really guard him? He runs the floor well, and I just thought they were flat last night. Malone warned about it before the game. He said everybody in town thinks we're going to win this game by 30. I was probably one of those people. And he was very concerned that they would get their you-know-whats handed to them. And, in fact, that's exactly what happened.
All right, busy night for you tonight, as the Nuggets Nuggets will be in action against Chicago, and then the Avalanche later against the Kraken in Seattle. Looking forward to that. Sandy, have a great night. Thank you so much.
Thanks, fellas.
Thanks, Sandy.
Sandy Clough. Give it to me, Benny. Give it to
Bow chicka bow wow.
Thank you.
Let it go, man.
All right.
What if a team actually handed their you-know-whats to them? Like, here.
There you go. Won't be needing those tonight. You may have them. Just return them on the way out, okay? May need them tonight against the Bulls. Okay. We'll get into some more Is It Just Me's as we get ready to hand things off. Nate, back to Chad next. Denver Sports Station, 104.3 The Fan. All right. Is It Just Me Friday? Got one last segment to go before I give you back to Chad Brown, Nate Jackson, in for Mark, who had to head off a little early to get over to do his Philadelphia prep, Philly and the Saints. He'll be calling. So thank you very much for doing that.
No problem. I got a Is It Just Me?
Oh, look at you playing the game.
Yeah, I'm playing the game, man. So we all watched, well, I don't know if we all watched that game last night, but the Patriots blanked the Falcons. And I thought it was a chance that the Falcons could go win that game. I wasn't buying the Patriots hype, but they shut them out. They're playing really, really, really good defense. Safe, conservative offense with a quarterback who's protecting the ball and kind of takes what they give him. Is it just me, or is the Broncos, were the Broncos really trying to do exactly what the Patriots are doing?
Interesting. Good defense. Let your defense be the real strength of your team. Ask your quarterback just to be efficient with the football. Get it out to the proper people. Don't turn it over. Kick field goals if necessary, and let the defense do the heavy lifting. Interesting. Yeah, how's that worked out?
For a couple games, it's worked out pretty well.
How's that worked out?
First three games, lights out.
Uh-huh.
Dallas Cowboys, boom. Washington football team, it's still a win. Question is, who's better, Teddy Bridgewater or Mac Jones right
now? But you know what? Here's the problem. Okay, I'm warming to this. I'm warming to the idea where I think you're right on. It's not just you. But here's the problem. I'm watching the Patriots play, and despite the fact that 10 games into the season, you know exactly what their offense is. It's on tape.
Yeah.
Mac Jones is going to try to beat you down the field. They're going to be very safe with their throws. Very rarely does the ball even travel more than 10 yards in the air beyond the line of scrimmage. Everybody knows this, and yet I am marveling at how many guys are open on those short routes, got guys buzzing around, they're open, and he's just dink-a-dunk-a-dink-a-dunk-a-dink-a-dunk. And I'm thinking to myself, man, how is it that Josh McDaniels, I know, he who shall not be named, but how is it that Josh McDaniels is able to draw up these kind of plays where guys are constantly open and Pat Shurmur can't? I want an answer, Nate.
Yeah, well, there's a
balance. Answer me, damn it.
There's a balance. It's a balance. They run the ball well. They run the ball well. They commit to it. Their play action is good. It's, I heard you guys talking about it a couple of hours ago. Their play action passes look like runs right off the bat. It's all tied to one another, right? So when you commit to the run and then you commit to having your play action passes look like runs for those first steps, guys end up running free. Then when you do decide to throw it, they're worried about the run and the play action. And if you just drop back and throw the ball, a lot of times you're going to catch some soft coverage. I will, as a receiver, I was always, if you're playing off of me, man, let's just pick these guys apart with short routes. Zone coverage, cover three, cover four, they're retreating. These corners are retreating on the snap of the ball. They don't wait on you. They backpedal. You can run these 5 yard outs, little slants, hitches, little short crossing routes. They're going to be open all day long. And if you have a quarterback who is committed to just getting the ball out of his hand and taking what the defense gives you, then you can pick apart a defense, especially if you do have a solid running game. So I think it's the balance. Josh McDaniels has been doing this a long time. He's really smart. He's really good at it. You know, the NFL head coaching boneyard is riddled with excellent coordinators. It doesn't mean you're going to be a good head coach just because you're a good coordinator. But McDaniels is a very good coordinator. And Mac Jones is running that thing to a T. So, look, you don't need five-star receivers to make it happen. These guys are all good in the NFL.
But you're saying you could do that here?
Oh, yeah.
There's no reason why. You've got the two running backs.
Mm-hmm.
You've got good running backs.
Yeah.
So, and you've got a quarterback who has the reputation, and we've seen at times this year, can get rid of the ball quickly, efficiently, and just get it into the hands of the open people.
Yeah.
So there's no reason why you can't do what New England did last night.
No reason. No reason.
Except you have an offensive coordinator who refuses to do what Josh McDaniels does.
Yep.
Wow.
Yeah. I mean, for me, man, first play of the game should be a quick pass to a receiver. That's what I think. I was a receiver, obviously, duh-duh. But I think that that's just a very effective way to start the game off, because you're going to get soft coverage, throw a little hitch, get the ball moving, then run the ball. Every single, like, Broncos awesome drive that resulted in a touchdown, they did a quick pass to start and then just started handing it to Javonte. And so you have to commit to the run, but that doesn't mean you have to run on the first play and the second play. Last week, the first three plays went to Melvin Gordon. Teddy Bridgewater is near the very top of the league in third down completion percentage, but near the very bottom in actually picking up a first down. That means he's not throwing to the receivers on third down. He's not. He's throwing to the tight ends and the running backs on third down. The guys who aren't as good at catching it as the dudes who are beyond the sticks. Throw it to those guys. I'd be insulted if I was a receiver not getting the opportunity on third down to pick up a first down. Over and over and over and over again. So it's not just Pat Shurmur. It's the guy throwing the ball, not taking chances. You got to take chances in football and in life, man. You can't be risk averse out there. You got to throw the ball beyond the sticks. And you got big dudes who know how to catch the ball as well. So it's not just play calling. It's execution. But Pat Shurmur deserves some blame.
Speaking of blame, I have to wear this. Because when I first said it, I kind of thought the same thing. And I wondered if people would pick up on it. And naturally, our listeners would. So I was saying that I don't look down on you only catching 27 balls in the NFL. To me, that is an unbelievable accomplishment. What a journey. What an overachieving story you were. And to be able to get to the NFL, never mind catch 27 passes and two touchdowns, that's an incredible. I would never denigrate an NFL player.
Except one.
As one missed the text, and immediately the text started flowing in. You never denigrate anyone except Paxton Lynch. Evans will never get on a player who had what it takes to make it to the NFL. He respects each and every one of them, except for Paxton Lynch. Mike, Paxton Lynch made it to the NFL. Nothing but respect for him. I call BS. You know what? Guilty.
So do you,
he's the only player that I don't respect.
Do you have any respect for him?
Honestly?
Like if you take yourself away from the smear
campaign. Honestly, no. You're just, and I'm being complimentary here, you're just a guy. Okay? You're just a normal-looking, regular dude that worked his butt off and overcame huge odds to get to the NFL and actually have an NFL career. This guy was touched. Hand of God touched. Right? I mean, just like, here you go. Here's everything you need. Size, arm, mobility. Go be an NFL quarterback. And he pissed it all away.
Maybe you just didn't love the game like that.
I guess I subscribe to the idea that for whom much is given, much is expected.
Mm.
And, man, and the fact that he couldn't be bothered to just be a pro and just understand what was given to him, just work, man. Just put in the work and it'll pay off.
There's a lot of those guys.
Chose not to do it.
Yep.
So I just, that's where the smear campaign came from. We have a lot of fun with it, but it is rooted in just genuine, man, what an opportunity you squandered. And someday in your life, you're going to look back on it and go, man, I blew it. Man, I wish I could have those days back.
Do you ever think about any of your olden days that way?
Sure, I have some regrets.
So we all do.
Not many.
Regrets, I've had a few.
Not the song you're used to singing. Think you could ever, like, take Sinatra rap, Sinatra lyrics and make them rap?
You can turn anything into rap.
I would love to hear that.
I'm going
to
work on that for our next show.
Work on that next time.
All right.
Hey, man, thank you again for filling in. I really, really, truly appreciate it.
No problem.
Makes the last hour go really, really smoothly. And you are all warmed up. You are in full lather. And you are ready to work with Chad Brown. Chad and Nate coming your way. Have a great weekend, everybody. We'll see you on Monday. Chad and Nate next. Denver Sports Station, 104.3 The Fan.
Hey, it's Mike Evans. Siltahar Motors understands sometimes bad things happen to good people. That includes bankruptcy. If that is you, you can still purchase a car at Siltahar with zero money down in almost all cases. This is a program they've been doing for 25 years. The dealership itself is almost 60. Family-owned business that is proud of their reputation and proud to be a huge part of the Broomfield community. If you file bankruptcy, Siltahar Motors can help. Zero down and no payments for 45 days in almost all cases. Contact Team Zero Down at 720-446-9222 or online at sthmotors.com.